Hi and welcome. I'm Daniel Rickaman, your mayor and guide to everything that's happening around town. Deep dive with us into the heart of the best kept secret in the Southeast, Columbia, South Carolina. From the buzzing culinary scene to the business trailblazers pushing our city's boundaries, we're here to give you an insider's glimpse into the vibrant tapestry of people, places, and opportunities that make Columbia unparalleled. Thanks for tuning in, and without further ado, let's jump right into the show. Welcome to another episode of Around Town. So excited today. We've got an incredible guest with us. He's actually a new hire at the city. So excited to have him in house today is Trevon Fordham, who is our Director of Violence Prevention. And we're so excited that we were able to finally get this office out of the ground, but also find the right person to lead it. And I have to tell you, being part of the interview process, his interview, we knew right away he was the right person, and we're so excited. And I think the things that he's been doing over the last 6 months, which I can't believe it's already been 6 months. But you know, I think it would be great for our listeners, Trevon, is maybe just talk a little bit about your background, how you ended up, you know, here at the city in this position. But you've got an incredible background, a lot of experience, but also kind of what drove you into to following this career path, because this is not a path that most people choose. This is a hard one, and folks, he's been doing an incredible job, and if you had a chance to meet him in the community, wait till you hear about the events and everything from grants to putting us in front of groups that we never had relationships with, but also getting folks who have been out there and bringing them together to have a bigger impact. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to our guest, Trevon.
Yeah. Thanks, Mayor, for having me on today. It's definitely a pleasure to be here around the town. To go back and talk about my background, I am a Charleston native, born and raised. After I graduated from Newberry College in 2006, I had some time where I worked in Rock Hill in Parks and Recreation. And so probably about 2008, I moved back to Charleston, probably December 2008. And I was a personal trainer and doing Parks and Recreation. And I was looking at something and wanted more job stability, more where I would have set hours and benefits, right? So I looked into law enforcement and I said, well, that's one career that as long as I never do anything stupid, I'll always have a job, right? So again, it was probably January of 2009. I applied with the City of North Charleston Police Department. And then I have an uncle who's here in Columbia. So he also told me about DJJ, Department of Juvenile Justice. I was like, okay, I like being around kids. I'm coaching. So I also applied with the Department of Juvenile Justice as a juvenile correctional officer. I was going through the process with both. And so at that point, I was getting to the back end and I was like, I may have to make a decision. I may get both of these jobs, right? So I didn't know if I would get both. Like I said, the City of North Charleston, some time had passed and I'd done all of the different steps when it came to pre-employment, did the physical test, Nelson Denny, everything. And so I prayed on it and I said, okay, God, whichever opportunity is for me is the one I'll take. It just so happened that probably in July of 2009, DJJ called me on Wednesday and offered me the job as JCO. I said, okay, I'll take it. Unfortunately, City of North Charleston called me the next day and I'd already accepted. But one of the things that I really helped make me make that decision is when I came to Columbia, I enjoyed the city. Then being, I was at Newberry College, I was down in Columbia often. It was almost like I was a USC student, although I wasn't because I was always down here. But really, I was sold on the culture at DJJ at that time, really. So I started out in August 2009 at the Department of Juvenile Justice as a juvenile correctional officer. I worked at the Broad River Road campus, which is all males, long-term commitment. And again, I just enjoyed it. I enjoyed it so much so that I spent the next 4 years at DJJ. And I had positions. I went from being a JCO to went and got my class one certification at the Criminal Justice Academy. Was a public safety officer, was a corporal, was a shift supervisor over there. I was the captain over the rapid response team while I was there. And I left DJJ as the institutional programs. I'm sorry. I left DJJ as a training instructor. So then from there, went to the Richland County Sheriff's Department, worked at RCSD for another 4 years. And then I really enjoyed the atmosphere of DJJ. So I went back to DJJ as an institutional programs manager. I was over the day-to-day operations of the Coastal Evaluation Center when it comes to their behavior management, when it comes to their level system, all the aspects of recreation. And then an opportunity came where the Department of Public Safety was looking for a juvenile justice specialist. My background had always been juvenile justice, working with young people, working with their families. So I got the opportunity to go to the Department of Public Safety, where I was a juvenile justice specialist and the compliance monitor. I was even tacked on the racial and ethnic disparities coordinator at the time. So I did that for 4 years at the Department of Public Safety. And a lot of that was working at the local and state level, building relationships. And it really just reminded me how important relationships are. Working grant administration for the Title II formula grants, but also before I left, being the project coordinator as far as for grants administration for the school resource officer program, where we administered, I think at that time, the pot was about 26, 27 million, being part of that team. So I really just enjoyed all of those times. I also, because doing training before, really enjoyed training folks, right? Teaching people new skills. So then from going from training instructor to going in the classroom, I was a criminal justice professor at York Technical College, still an adjunct now, but did that for a year, but I wanted something a little bit more challenging. Then along came this position. And I saw it, and it really was really the culmination of a lot of things I've done over the last couple of years. And honestly, when I looked at it, I said, I'm not sure that I want to do city government, right? But being familiar with Columbia and being a resident here since 2009, I was like, I know Columbia, I know the area. And the more and more I thought about it, the more and more I thought about the vision. I thought about what this office could be. I thought about how we could implement things. You know, before I even interviewed and I just applied, I was already thinking of, okay, if I get hired, here are things we can do. Here are relationships we can build. I started looking at the crime rates for the city of Columbia specifically, right? Started looking at who's out doing the work, who are the community partners, and preparation for if I did get the job. And that's brought me here today after going through the process, interviewing. And so that's really my background, but it's always been a passion for helping others, working with others, but also working with youth and families.
So, you know, having worked at DJJ and seeing a lot of the kids that were coming out of our communities, and having an opportunity to be on the prevention side, the intervention side, I mean, what did you see there that gave you clues? Hey, I think I can make a difference here. You know, I think if I can get to some of these youth ahead of time, and, you know, the majority, unfortunately, of our violent crime is young men between, 16 and 24. I mean, I think that's a broad enough range, but maybe you can concentrate a little more. What did you see by having those interactions there? All right, I see a path here. I think I can affect this change. Just maybe give us some insight.
Right. And so one of the things that's always struck me, and I think, and this is outside of this question, but then getting back to it, I'm a firm believer that just having a conversation with someone can change a lot. Just having a conversation, right? We're all individuals. We have differences, and some of those are more apparent than others, but having a conversation with somebody helps you to really realize you have a lot more in common. So when I was at DJJ, I had the opportunity to work with youth who had some of the most violent charges in the state and were there long-term, anywhere from 3.5 years to 4.5 years, right? But just having conversations with them and realizing that this is still a kid. This is still a kid. When you see someone that was in there for attempted murder, criminal sexual conduct, and then you talk to them and they're like, okay, they get mad because they didn't get their board game or their rec was taken away. You're like, that's childish. And then you have to step back and remember, these are kids. Right? These are kids that don't have life sentences, so they're going back out into our communities. So that was my mission while I was there, and that's a team we had. We really worked and focused on every day building those positive relationships to make sure that when those young people were released, as most of them will be, they'll get released back out in our communities, they're better than when they go out. So that's what drove me from being a JCO and really wanting to see that is just the knowledge and understanding of seeing that there still are kids and they're going to go back out into communities because most of them don't have life sentences. They can't get it as a juvenile DJJ. So they're coming back to our communities.
So do you see that part of the mission there too, and probably inside and outside, and getting them prepared, conflict resolution? how to get a job, how to present, how to walk away, you know, how to channel anger, or, I mean, are those common that you worked on both on the inside when you were there working with these young gentlemen and see that as an opportunity on the outside as well?
Most definitely. When we talk about conflict resolution, most days when I make decisions is based on a choice, right? And I'll make a choice on what's the best decision that I have available. When you think about a young person or someone that A, may not be thinking, or B, they're not really thinking about how they can peacefully resolve this conflict, that's when they may go out and commit a violent crime because they feel like that's the way they have to. They don't see options. And then we talk about anger management. We talk about cognitive behavioral therapy. We talk about a number of different things, right? But all of those loop into why people commit violent crimes. Some of them do it out of necessity. Some of them just do it haphazardly, right? But when we talk about workforce development, helping them get jobs, it places them in a better position economically to where now I don't have to commit that crime and steal to provide for my family because I've got a paying job that I can work on. And then your mindset starts to change, right? Some of the places you used to go, some of the things you used to do, you're not going to do anymore because you're like, I got a job. I got a good job with benefits. I've got some responsibilities. I'm a family man. I'm a pillar of my community. It changes your mindset. But when folks are down at the bottom and they have nothing, I always say the most dangerous man or woman in this world is someone who has nothing to look forward to or live for. So when you have no hope and you have nothing else to hold on to, there's nothing you won't do. When you have those opportunities to be a productive citizen, to have a job, to take care of your family, to do things legally, that's what most people want. They just want to be able to take care of themselves and their families. So sometimes when people don't have that, they do resort to violent crime. So again, that changing of mindset, changing of behaviors, it's all important when it comes down to that. And helping folks to be able to make better decisions with conflict resolution, with wraparound services, with anger management.
Reading some of the studies and read a book called Bleeding Out and several other books out there. And, you know, we talk a lot about people, places, behavior. And Right. Then obviously, you know, that helps us identify those areas, prevention, intervention, law enforcement are the other keys of that. One of the things that I haven't been able to find the research is when did we become such a gun violent community? You know, what started that? Because conflict used to be back in the day, you know, you got in a fight and then it was over. But Right. Today, or you heard about shootings and they were business related. And I'm talking about drug business or something. I mean, that was related in there. You didn't hear about the gun violence that we hear, see, and read about almost every day. What do you think the trigger was that suddenly the littlest thing set people into that mode?
Right. And I can remember not too long ago when I was growing up, I won't share my age, but we'd get in fights. I might fight you today in the neighborhood. I might fight you next week. And guess what? If I lost, I may fight you again when I saw you again. We had availability of guns, but we never went and resorted to a gun. Right. But now you have young folks and just people in general that have weapons on them that shouldn't have them. So now a conflict of, okay, I may see you and want to fight you later, now turns into, I have this gun, so I'm going to use it. And guns are not tools when it comes down to conflict resolution. Guns are tools for protection. Anytime there's a firearm involved, that's specifically for protection of yourself, for others, or for your family. But what we're seeing in the society now is because of the prevalence of guns and availability, is that people are utilizing guns for conflict resolution. There are other methods for that, other means. Firearms are not the way. It's not the way to solve. And I think also with a culture, when it comes down to social and, you know, when they see the influences around them, where gun culture is promoted around them, but also in video games, music, it's like, okay, I'm not cool if I don't have a gun. Or this person has a gun that I know, so I've got to get a gun. And so that doesn't make it any better either. But at the end of the day,
it just enhances the problem.
It just enhances the problem. Right. So at the end of the day, we've really got to really hone in and talk to our young people about, and also older folks, our community in general, about firearm safety, about gun storage. One thing that I really tell young people all the time, guns aren't toys and they're not a means for solving an issue.
They create more issues.
They create more issues. Right. It's only for protection. Okay. And when you understand that, it's not like Grand Theft Auto. You shoot someone, kill them, and then they come back or you come back. There's no coming back from that. And I think sometimes it doesn't really hit them until there are consequences after a shooting. And now not only is someone's life gone, but another life is essentially gone while they're still here, because they may be in jail for a very long time, if not life. So those are the things that I try to stress to folks when we talk about firearm safety, when we talk about storing your gun safely. But the biggest thing that we're really working on for this upcoming year is letting people know through training, also through pamphlets and materials, that firearms are not the way to resolve conflicts. It's not, hey, I have beef with you, I have an issue with you, I'm gonna get my gun and shoot you. That's not what we're aiming after. That's not who we are as a society. And we can handle conflicts without actually using guns in that regard.
The thing that it's, I guess interests me, or you know, you'd love to have the answer to, is how do we get that message to all folks that, you know, that your action may solve a problem you think you have, but it creates so many other problems and it affects so many other people that then creates a chain reaction at spider webs. Do you think that talking to these young people that have been incarcerated, from your experience at day, that understood that their action created a chain reaction?
So from conversations, I can say that they understood it as they were sitting in jail, right? But some of them will tell you they didn't have those conversations prior to they committing their crimes. So that's where the prevention piece is going to come in, but also the intervention piece for some young people who do make a mistake that's not life-threatening and may possess a weapon, right? Let them know, hey, this is where you're headed. This is where you're headed with that firearm. It's not a toy. It's not something to play with. So when we can catch them, hopefully, before they get to that point of having to commit a crime, of having to either take someone's life and ruin their life, because that's essentially what happens. But that's one thing that I found out is a lot of the young people didn't have those mentors, didn't have that supportive services. They didn't have people around them to have those conversations with them. So as part of our initiative and awareness, we're having these conversations with our young people. But also as far as from the intervention standpoint, for those who have kind of stepped into that rabbit hole, saying, hey, you're not too far gone. You can still be helped. You can still be saved if you're willing. There are services out there that are available, referrals we can get you to. But that's going to be key, is folks that caring folks in the community that really just have these conversations. Because in some of our communities, they're not being had.
When I think it's a good point for you to talk a little bit about what you discovered when you first took the job and kind of getting out in the community. Also understanding, sharing with folks what you've been doing in the community to kind of further those conversations, open up opportunities. And then I think the last part that would be great for you to share with folks that are listening is, this is what you can do to help. Because you and I've had the conversation is there are a lot of people who want to help, but they don't know how, or it's not consistent. And I think consistency is probably one of the biggest plays. And we've talked about how important it is if we could create a network of volunteers that when you're in a community, and we know the communities that are challenged. I mean, we know it statistically, we know how it festers and where it goes. If we could impact those communities, we could have a drastic reduction in shootings in our community.
Most definitely. I'd say, over the first 6 months, the most important thing that I've been doing is really taking a layout of the city. Again, although I've been, lived in Columbia since 2009, I look at things a little bit differently now, right? From this role. So really getting out, being at community events, which in the first 6 months, I think I've attended over 100 community events at different places, whether it's faith-based, whether it's at different local organizations that are having. But really talking to folks, because that engagement has been so important. Also bringing out service providers who provide services to communities, offering referrals. Some of the things that I've heard so far is that people just weren't aware of some of the services that are right in their own backyard. Services that they can take advantage of every single day. You have folks that are ready and willing to assist, and those services are there, right? So first 6 months have been laying the foundation, really setting the office up, refining the office's mission, its goals. As we move into 2024, we've got some clear goals that we're really going to release here soon and talk to folks about in the general public. securing some grant funding. We were able to secure a BJA local solicitation grant, which we're going to utilize for prevention and education when it comes to stopping gun violence. Also attending a lot of training, going out to other places. Cities United had a convening, a training that we went to or that I went to. We had a one-on-one coaching session with Cities United as well in Louisville, Kentucky. Went there. They're doing some great work also in Lexington, Kentucky. Talking to folks in Charlotte, even connected with some folks up in New York City and the plan that they're doing, Philadelphia. We've been able to connect with folks all across the country. I'm talking about Denver, the DMV area, or up in DC, to really see the roadmap of what they've done. I've also attended the Bureau of Justice Assistance Violence Reduction Summit a few weeks ago. And that really showed the infrastructure from a national perspective. Mm-hmm. What training and technical assistance is out there. They provided a roadmap for violence reduction. So really looking at what are the evidence-based practices that are working in other places. And then having the foundation of seeing what Columbia has to offer, I'm encouraged. Because we've got everything around us that we need to really reduce our violence. I think the one key thing that was missing was the establishment of this office to coordinate the efforts. And having that, coordinating all of our city's efforts, our police department does a great job. Our public works does a great job when it comes to beautification, keeping our streets clean. Our parks and recreation does an amazing job with programming. Community development and all of the different trainings that they do, Office of Business Opportunity. Pulling it all together, right, to work in the same function, to let folks know that we're all about empowerment. We're all about improving the quality of life for all of our citizens. Because, again, when citizens live a quality life, those are usually not the citizens that are involved in violent crime, right? So that's been the first 6 months of really pulling all that together. We've hosted two events so far. The first one was a community forum where we did it during National Youth Youth Justice Action Month. We brought young people in. And we wanted to see how many we would have at a Saturday morning starting at 9 o'clock. Again, I think we probably had 50-something youth that were there.
Which is amazing at 9 a.m. on a
at
Saturday.
At 9 a.m. on a Saturday. And what was so funny about it is when they first were there, they were like, they wanted to answer questions. They didn't really want to talk. They were in their own shell. And that was at 9 o'clock. When I tell you that when we brought everybody back together, because we also had the parents and the adults. We had everybody together and we talked to them about everything about violence in communities. And then we separated them because we wanted the young people to have their voice be amplified. We wanted to hear what they had to say. We asked them about their opinions about violence. We asked them about safe zones. We asked them about what are some recommendations that they have. What do they just want to see from the city? Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, we had the adults. We were talking about parenting and we had some professionals that came and some experts in the areas. We were talking about parenting, talking about communication with your young person. And then we had service providers there from our state agencies when it comes to child service. We had some workforce development folks there. One of the key things that was important about that event is we asked about 25 different residents, young people and adults. If we have an event, what topics do you want us to cover?
Interesting.
We hit each of those topics and everyone was so pleased. They're still asking when we're going to have the other one, which we're going to have more of those soon. The second event that we hosted was the Remembrance Vigil. Again, we had 87 participants register. We had 68 attendees, and of those, 62 were actually residents of the city of Columbia. So that was really interesting as well. We brought in service providers from the Richland County Coroner's Office, Columbia Police Department Victim Services. We had the South Carolina Victims Assistance Network. We had Hush No More, Rediscover Me, the Rich Program. Sister Care was there. I don't want to leave anybody out, but we had about 10 different community organizations that were there, and we had them tell each of the survivors and also families of those we lost about different services that are in the area. And folks left out there, and the feedback that we had was they were thankful. They were thankful that the city cared enough about them to host a remembrance event, but also that they were able to connect with other survivors and family members of lost ones. So they didn't feel like they were alone moving forward. And that support, that networking is what we want to build on. Some of them were even actually drawn into service providers that they're going to start receiving free services from when it comes to grief counseling, when it comes to just therapeutic services, supportive services moving forward. So those are the type of events that we want to partner with community organizations on. I talk a lot about the community because that's where it's at. That's where we're headed. With the support of the city, we really want to increase capacity for our community organizations that are doing the work. It's so important for us all to work together and for the city to be able to continue to support those community organizations, because that's where we're going to see the most changes. And so as we talk about how people can help, that's the biggest thing right now. We're really tapping into our faith-based groups and really sitting down with them. We're actually going to host some lunch and learns training sessions as well for nonprofit organizations, particularly those who are up and comers. We're going to sit down and let them know what the city's priorities are this year when it comes down to violence reduction, what the city is working on, what are our goals, right? How we want to reduce the trends of violence, how we want to see that reduction in overall shootings, right? And then we're going to let folks know, here's how you can help. Whether it's partnering with us to sponsor a violence reduction event, whether it's you'd like us to come out and host a training for your area, for your community. All these number of things is things that we're working on for 2024. So, but that's how people can help. It's really us connecting with them to really make our communities better, to make our communities safer. One of the things that I found from being out there is that overall, I can go anywhere probably across the United States, right? And if I'm in the room with colleagues or different people because my name or title or any credentials that I have, people will listen. I understand that. Something else I found out and I was reminded of and I understand, that's not always the case. So if I go in the city of Columbia, right? Folks that don't see me every day, I'm not their family member. I'm not their cousin. I'm not their peer, right? So those are the people that influence them that they listen to. So with that being said, we really want to partner with community organizations and those folks that are in those social networks, right? And then as they see us more as the city, then that relationship continues to build, continue to grow. But if we can empower community organizations that can consistently do the work on a daily basis to work with residents, that's where that bridging the gap comes from.
I think that's the key. I think what you've realized, and I think what we've seen by spending the time to really dig into it, because the one thing I know about the city is we know the numbers,
right?
You know, we've got evidence based, and it's not entire communities, it's pockets. So we know exactly who the players are, and exactly where the influences happen. We know the communities that can be helped.
Right.
But we had all the parts and pieces.
Correct.
We just didn't have the puzzle put together.
Correct.
And I think what we're seeing is the investment that we made in this position in this department was what was really needed to bring everybody together to address it. And I think from a community standpoint, I think it's more and more important now that what we really need people to do is be those volunteers that consistent.
Right.
And I think that's something you and I've talked about, and I think you're seeing it firsthand. If we can get people to commit every day to working in our hot spots with our youth and helping them, and that consistency will change a lot of things. And it was finished. I had a pastor and he said, I really want to get my church more involved because I feel like, you know, we show up somewhere on a Saturday and come to church on Sunday feeling good. But the reality is we needed to be there Monday through Friday. And he said, if we can find time to do everything else, can we create enough volunteers that every day somebody's in that challenge community that we're making a consistent difference and showing people there is a different path, there is an opportunity, there is, and listening, you know?
Right. That's the important.
My favorite saying in the world is you got two ears and one mouth, you know?
Right.
The more you listen, the more opportunity. What surprised you out of everything you've seen in the last 6 months, what surprised you the most?
What surprised me the most? I will say the one thing that surprised me the most, and you talk about connections and relationships and networking, is how eager people are to serve. That's what's really surprised me, honestly, the most. Now, we are in a position to where you do have some where you've got to give them the marching orders, but once they see where they fit in the puzzle, the support from the community has been amazing.
Do you think it's that they just weren't engaged or knew they could make a difference, that they needed someone to say, hey, you can fit in here and be part of it? You think it's more of a, that we're reaching out in a different way and manner, getting people to the table, bringing groups? I mean, you think that is why you're seeing that?
Well, I think from the city standpoint, from the outside looking in, again, being in Columbia, I believe the city's always had opportunities and really kind of reached out. The engagement of being on site in your apartment complex, talking to your neighbors, going to different churches, right? That may be a style that when we looked at everything, we said, what is the one thing that's missing? And it was a lot more on site, ground level, community outreach. And I think that's what this office has really been rolling up our sleeves, pulling up our bootstraps and doing, is really getting out into communities, particularly those of highest violence or higher violence in the city, and really talking to folks about that engagement piece, about letting them know how important they are to really resolving violent crime in that community. Because at the end of the day, when we empower community organizations, we empower residents, we empower all of our communities. So that's been the key. Like I said, that's been the most surprising thing, is just how willing folks are to come together. And I think the other part too, is a lot of it's been, I'm an outsider, if you will, since I've not worked for the city before. You know, some folks may remember me from working at Richland County, but overall, they would say I'm an outsider, right? I'm new to the job, right? So a different kind of voice, if you will, to where they may be used to some other community organizers that, you know, they may not agree with, or they have differences, is, or things that kind of push them out to their silo. Whereas I'm coming in and say, hey, here's what we can do that's best for everybody. It's best for not only for you, for residents, for stakeholders, for the city. This is what's best for everybody. And I think when we start talking about those commonalities, start talking about the quality of life, regardless of who you are, where you live, we all want to be safe in our communities. We just want to sometimes sit out on the porch and be able to enjoy the breeze, right? And in some communities, they can't do that. So if we talk to folks about how that can happen and what part they play in that, I think that's been the key and been the most important part thing that I've seen so far, is just a willingness to step up. And we're definitely going to run with that and coordinate different programs and activities to continue to foster that engagement and outreach.
We're going to spend the last few minutes of this podcast firing some quick answer questions to you, so that people can get to know who you are. So I'm going to start off with, what's the last book you read?
The last book I read, it was for work, but it was Building Cultures in Diverse Classrooms.
Favorite food?
That's a hard one. I don't know that I have a favorite food. I love all foods. Probably have to be Jamaican or Caribbean.
Ah, interesting. Favorite ice cream flavor?
Butter pecan, because it was my mom's favorite. So I ate it all the time growing up.
Favorite NFL team?
Don't have an NFL team. I like college football. My dad's a big Dolphins fan, so.
What's your favorite college team then?
South Carolina Gamecocks all day.
Ah, we got a good answer here. Last movie you went to see?
Last movie I went to see? I think it was maybe a year ago, 2 years ago, but I can't remember what it was. Oh, I can't remember the last movie I went to see. It's been a while.
What's your favorite thing about Columbia?
My favorite thing about Columbia? Our parks, our trailways, just the scenic, like particularly with Finley Park. And I can't wait to see it after the renovations. But just the opportunity that when you want to get out and just enjoy the city, you can go on a river walk. That's probably my favorite part of the city.
That's awesome. Definitely. What do you do to relax?
To relax, again, I get out of the house. Usually I'll go take a walk, listen to some music, whether it's walking down the riverfront, coming, you know, down here on Main Street, and just taking a live music, but just enjoying it and relaxing atmosphere, kind of shutting everything off, kind of detaching for a little bit.
What's your favorite place to vacation?
Favorite place to vacation? Savannah.
Savannah. Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, everybody, I want to thank y'all for tuning in. We appreciate your time and your interest in our city and listening to. We had a great guest today. If you have any questions, you can reach Trevon at the city. His office is at City Hall. If you want to get engaged and involved, please reach out to us. We'd love to have you part of our efforts to reduce gun violence. You know, every life that we can save in this community is a life that can change somebody else's life. And I'm a true believer in it. I think you're going to see some great things coming out of this office, and what it's been able to do so far has been amazing, because when we built this office, it was intended to be a quarterback. And I think you're seeing a quarterback and, you know, he's getting through his first few games here in the season, but he's ready to keep on playing. So thanks for tuning in. Look forward to seeing you in our next episode of Around Town.